From the Maine Public Broadcasting Network, I'm Tom Porter, and for Tuesday, September 16th, this is Maine Things Considered. The ACLU of Maine filed suit against a Portland police officer who arrested a couple after they recorded a police stop on their cell phone. According to new census data, Maine is one of just two states in the country where the number of uninsured increased last year. And how one Maine college secures well-paying jobs for nearly all of its graduates.
It really is a unique school in the state of Maine. It's unique not only in its location, it's unique in its program, and it's unique in the success that we achieve.
Those stories and more coming up. This is Maine Things Considered. I'm Tom Porter. The American Civil Liberties Union of Maine has filed a lawsuit on behalf of a Bar Harbor couple arrested in Portland after using a cell phone to record a police stop involving several officers. In their lawsuit against Officer Benjamin Noyes Jr., the couple alleged that the arrest violated their right to free speech, which includes the right to observe, photograph and record the police performing their work in public. Susan Sharon has more.
It happened around midnight on May 24th. Jill Walker of Bar Harbor says she and her boyfriend, Sabatino Scataloni, had just had a pizza in the Old Port and were on their way back to their hotel room when they saw a police stop involving five officers and a single person sitting in a car.
And it just seemed to me from across the street that it was a lot of police officers for one person. It was a woman in the vehicle, and we had decided to record from our cell phone just for the sake of being a witness to what was going on.
Walker says it became clear that the officers were putting the woman through a battery of field sobriety tests. After several minutes, Walker says an officer crossed the street and asked them if they knew the woman. They said no and continued observing the traffic stop. Walker says they watched without interfering and eventually moved in for a closer look. She says at this point, they'd stopped recording video.
We were back several feet. We were certainly probably somewhere around 20 feet away. We weren't saying anything. We weren't even talking to each other.
Walker says a second police officer asked them again if they knew the woman, and again they said no. But that's when Walker says Officer Benjamin Noyes Jr. angrily approached them and ordered them to get off the street in 2 seconds or they would be arrested.
And we were shocked because we weren't doing anything. And I said, why? And Tino said, but we're just standing here. And the next thing you know, we're being handcuffed. And it all happened. It was very surreal.
According to their lawsuit, Officer Noyes ordered two other officers to arrest Walker and Scataloni, who were not given Miranda warnings, and who were taken by separate squad cars to the Cumberland County Jail, where they were booked, searched, fingerprinted, and interrogated. They were released a couple of hours later after each paid $60 bail. Both were charged with obstructing government administration, a charge which carries a maximum penalty of 364 days in jail, and which the Cumberland County District Attorney declined to prosecute.
For the rest of their lives, my clients are going to have to answer yes whenever they're asked on an official form if they've ever been arrested. And that's just not fair. They did nothing wrong here.
Zach Hayden is an attorney with the ACLU of Maine. He says his clients are hoping to receive unspecified compensation for their injuries, including attorney's fees.
But more than that, they're really hoping to send a message that this sort of thing is not acceptable anywhere in the state of Maine.
Hayden says with so many people able to record video and audio on their cell phones, he expects an increase in similar situations involving police. In response to the lawsuit, the City of Portland and the Portland Police Department released a written statement saying the allegations are being taken seriously. An internal investigation into the pair's arrest has been underway since July, but the department will not comment further. Meanwhile, Sergeant Noyes, who is a 17-year veteran of the police force, continues to serve in an on-duty capacity. Jill Walker says she hopes to never run into him again. For MPBN News, I'm Susan Sharon.
Maine is one of just two states in the nation where the number of people without health insurance increased in 2013. U.S. Census Bureau data released today found that in 1 year, the percentage of the state's uninsured grew from 10.2 to 11.2%, an addition of 12,000 people. The figures provide a backdrop as the next enrollment period approaches for the Affordable Care Act's insurance marketplace, Patty White reports.
First, let's start with the numbers that consumer health advocates like Jake Grindle of Western Maine Community Action are excited about. last year's marketplace enrollment.
Maine did really well during the last open enrollment period.
Grindel says it was projected that 23,000 people would sign up for insurance.
And we ended up getting a little better than 44,000, so we almost doubled the projection.
Despite those high enrollment numbers for the marketplace, Maine's overall number of uninsured is troubling, says Garrett Martin, the executive director of the progressive Maine Center for Economic Policy.
We are one of two states in the country that actually saw an increase in the number of people who, or in the percentage of people who didn't have insurance.
Martin is citing U.S. Census Bureau figures for 2013, released Tuesday. The Bureau reports that the number of uninsured in Maine grew by 12,000 people from 2012 to 2013. And though the report's margin of error is 10,000 people and doesn't account for 2014 enrollment figures, Martin says the preliminary data he's seen doesn't look any better. So why the growth in Maine's uninsured when marketplace enrollment was such a success?
When you look at Maine and you see that we're so out of step with the rest of the country, I think one can't help but look at what were the policy decisions that have been made in recent years that potentially might have increased the number of people without health insurance.
Martin is referring to eligibility restrictions to Maine's Medicaid program known as MaineCare that Governor LePage and the legislature implemented in 2012. Another factor, says Martin, is Maine's resistance to accepting federal funds to expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. He says it would provide insurance to 70,000 Mainers and an overall boost to the economy.
We projected, based on our analysis, that Maine is losing roughly $1 million a day by not accepting federal funds. Well, we've crossed the 250-day mark, so we've lost over $250 million.
In a written statement, Governor LePage's press secretary, Adrian Bennett, says past Medicaid expansions in Maine had little impact on the number of uninsured in the state, and that eligibility restrictions from 2012 brought Maine in line with national averages for Medicaid coverage. Bennett says at this point, Maine is still well below the national rate of uninsured, which is around 16%. With the next enrollment for the federal marketplace opening from November to February, health policy advocates say they have a lot of work to do in half the amount of time they had last year. Ron Pollack, the executive director of the National Consumer Healthcare Organization Families USA, says the biggest challenge to getting people to enroll is the fact that less than 2 out of 5 people know there are subsidies available to purchase insurance.
So we're talking about almost 2/3 of the people are uninsured, are unaware that they can get help.
But Deb Shields, an application counselor from Eastport Health Center, says she's seeing a shift in attitude toward the marketplace compared to last year.
We got a lot of mixed reaction. There was a lot of people that didn't like this plan at all.
Shields says as people have seen neighbors, family, or friends enroll, they've realized they can afford insurance coverage.
I'm in Washington County, and I talk to people all the time that have never been able to afford insurance at any level, and now can find insurance coverage that's extraordinary.
Maine has expanded the number of application counselors and navigators throughout the state. Shields says she's hoping word-of-mouth stories will translate into more people walking through the door looking to enroll for insurance. For MPBN News, I'm Patty White.
It's 5:43. Still to come, two of the region's largest energy firms announce plans to expand natural gas in Maine and New England. And why one Maine school was recently ranked the best public university in the nation.
Within 90 days of graduation, we're in excess of 90% placement within their career fields. Many of those students making six-figure salaries with a bachelor's degree.
This is Maine Things Considered.
With this roundup of other Maine news, I'm Ed Morin. An Androscoggin County Superior Court jury has found one of two defendants guilty of criminal trespass in connection with a protest against oil trains a year ago in downtown Auburn. The Lewiston Sun Journal is reporting that Douglas Bowen of Porter was found guilty and fined $100. A second jury was still deliberating charges against a second protester, Jessica Dowling from Unity. The two defendants were tried at the same time in the same courtroom, but with different juries. They were arrested after an Auburn police officer asked them to stop sitting on train tracks not far from the Auburn courthouse. State labor officials want to know which jobs Maine businesses have a hard time filling. The Department of Labor's Center for Workforce Research and Information is sending a survey to 3,500 Maine businesses this month. Department of Labor spokesperson Julie Rabinowitz says the center wants to find out if it's factors like the wage level that's making the position hard to fill or the set of skills the employer is looking for. She says the Workforce Research and Information Center will compile the information and issue a report at the first of the year.
What we want to see are, there certain types of positions, certain types of industries? Are there positions where there's no training program here in Maine that we need to start, or there's not enough training programs, or there's not enough people going into the existing training programs?
Rabinowitz says information about specific jobs and employers will be kept confidential and will only be released in aggregate form. Independent Maine U.S. Senator Angus King told U.S. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel at a meeting of the Senate Armed Services Committee today that while he supports the immediate goals of President Obama's policy regarding the Islamic State militant group, he believes the administration needs to formulate a long-term policy to address radical Islam. King says equipping and training opponents of ISIS is fine in the short term, but he says the U.S. needs to figure out why young Muslims are drawn to ISIS.
What's motivating them? How do we counter their message that is attracting people into this radical, death-oriented philosophy?
King says countries in the region like Turkey have to become involved in the struggle against ISIS. King wonders if there's a plan B if the coalition doesn't stand up. The head of a progressive low-income advocacy group is leaving to take a position with a Portland-based organization that seeks to improve the lives of vulnerable families in Maine. Maine Equal Justice Partners Executive Director Sarah Gagne-Holmes says the John T. Gorman Foundation works to bring together community organizations to address the needs of low-income families.
I'm looking forward to continuing to find best practices from across the U.S. that can be implemented in Maine to improve the lives of vulnerable people and eventually improve, you know, the economic stability and growth of the state of Maine.
Gagne-Holmes has her last day with Maine Equal Justice Partners as a week from today. She's been with the organization for 8 years. For MPBN News, I'm Ed Morin.
This is Maine Things Considered. I'm Tom Porter. Two of the region's largest energy firms have announced plans to expand natural gas in Maine and New England as a way to eliminate shortages during the winter months. Spectra Energy Corporation and Northeast Utilities will partner for the $3 billion project that's expected to begin operating in November 2018. AJ Higgins has more.
It's a huge project that supporters say could eventually lower electric and heating bills to levels that could make Maine more competitive with the rest of New England. The new Access Northeast pipeline would ship natural gas north via the Algonquin Pipeline Corridor, which runs from New Jersey to Everett, Massachusetts, and then on to Maine via the Maritimes and Northeast Pipeline. Mary Lee Hanley is an outreach specialist for Spectra Energy that is based in Houston, Texas.
So it will open up access to Maine consumers for additional clean, reliable domestic natural gas to heat their homes and fuel their businesses.
Hanley said the $3 billion project will be capable of reliably delivering in excess of 1 billion cubic feet of natural gas per day to serve the region's most efficient power plants and to meet increasing demand from heating customers. As the company embarks on the project, it will be inviting new potential customers from throughout New England to signal their interest in converting to natural gas.
We're in the very, very preliminary stages, and we will be receiving offers of expressions of interest between now and October 31st. And once we receive those expressions of interest, we'll be able to determine the facilities required to meet the needs of customers.
In Maine, news of the proposed pipeline expansion was welcomed by the governor's office. New England governors had considered imposing a new tax on electric customers to fund additional natural gas pipeline construction, a plan that was ultimately put on hold by Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick. Patrick Woodcock, director of Governor Paul LePage's energy office, says the project underscores the need for New England governors to renew plans for additional pipelines in their states in order for Spectra to maximize its potential.
They clearly need that those mechanics outlined from the governors to move the project at the scale that the companies would like. So the governor's office certainly appreciative of these companies stepping forward And now the governors need to do the same and move forward with a bold initiative to bring natural gas to market in New England.
The region has been plagued by spot shortages, resulting in massive hikes in the cost of fuel. Part of the reason is the lack of natural gas infrastructure in New England. The project would need the approval of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, which would review the company's plans to use existing pipeline corridors to minimize effects on landowners. Pat Scully is the chief executive officer of the Bernstein Schur law firm and a leading consultant on energy issues. He says the proposal will be thoroughly vetted during the FERC process.
It's not necessarily something that one should view as a and necessarily a major impediment to the effort, because federal policy certainly supports the expansion of natural gas infrastructure.
In addition to the Spectra proposal, other pipeline projects for New England also being discussed include a much-debated plan to move gas from Pennsylvania through New York to western Massachusetts. For MPBN News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
For most students, going back to school typically involves lectures, study halls, lab work, and if you're enrolled at one particular college in Down East Maine, jumping into the ocean. That's the sound of students at Maine Maritime Academy participating in the annual ship jump, a 40-foot plunge into the ocean from their training ship, the State of Maine. It's a long-standing tradition, particularly for freshmen, that heralds the beginning of the academic year. First into the water this year was college president Bill Brennan. Brennan says this unconventional start to the school year reflects the fact that Maine Maritime is no ordinary four-year college.
It really is a unique school in the state of Maine. It's unique not only in its location, it's unique in its program, and it's unique in the success that we achieve.
By that, Brennan means finding well-paid jobs for the vast majority of its graduates. MMA has done so well that Money magazine recently named it as the best public university in the country for the money. The cost of a four-year degree here is $105,000, and while students are usually able to find jobs, the average starting salary is $64,000. Students graduate from the academy with a relatively high debt load of more than $41,000, but Brennan says this must be weighed against other factors.
Our students do come out with debt, but, you know, within 90 days of graduation, we're in excess of 90% placement within their career fields, many of those students making six-figure salaries with a bachelor's degree.
Set on 30 acres on the tip of the picturesque Castine Peninsula, Maine Maritime Academy was founded in 1941 as a way to train much-needed merchant sea captains to help with the war effort. More than 70 years later, there is still a heavy emphasis on teaching seamanship and the ability to pilot vessels of all sizes anywhere in the world. Here, in one of the Academy's state-of-the-art navigation simulators, students can take to the bridge of an imaginary ship, surrounded by computer screens representing a 180-degree view of the coastline. Other vessels appear on the horizon, and simulated radio traffic is delivered to the trainees as they learn to call the shots under pressure. Coast Guard veteran Jim Sanders is a technician. He prepares the simulator for the next group of students.
So this is as close as you can get to standing on a bridge without actually standing on a bridge, do you think?
Yes. It gives you a feeling of, once you get in here and things start happening, you do get engaged, and it can feel very, very live.
Where are we now?
This is Prince William Sound, Alaska. So we're way outside of Valdez. And we're going to make a turn coming up around here.
In another part of campus, a handful of students listen intently as Andy Chase teaches a skill that's been important for thousands of years, how to repair a sail. Many of his students, he says, are looking for careers as professional sailors, mostly on other people's boats.
So, again, you're just going to leave a little bit of a tail that's going to get sewn into.
I've told these guys that this project they're going to do is a sample as if they were rebuilding the clue of a sail, the corner of a sail. And sure enough, one of my students had to do that on a 175-foot-tall mainsail. The reef tack pulled out, and he hand-sewed a new tack onto the sail for it.
About 70% of MMA students are members of the so-called Regiment of Midshipmen. While not actually members of the military, they wear uniforms and adhere to standards of discipline and leadership more typically found at a service academy. For students on track to be deck officers in the Merchant Marine, the regiment is compulsory. Others choose to join. Joseph Torchia is a junior in the engineering program and a midshipman in the regiment.
Really, the biggest thing I've got out of it is it's a huge leadership lab. The regiment provides a ton of leadership opportunities that is just invaluable.
Torchia is headed for a few years active duty in the Navy when he graduates, but has his eye on a career in the merchant fleet when he leaves the military. However, not all MMA students have salt water running through their veins. Degrees also offered in subjects like international logistics and power plant engineering. Senior Alex Gagnon is a business major who has barely left dry land during his time at the academy. After graduation, he has a job waiting for him in the energy industry.
I hadn't heard of Maine Maritime until high school, and then people I'd already known who had gone there, and I realized every single one of these people is successful. I want this.
Lillian Slezas is also a senior. She recently completed a summer internship with Boeing, but has not yet made up her mind where to work next year.
I really enjoyed the business program, and it's really versatile. A lot of us go into logistics, but, you know, international business, you can really go anywhere with that.
Tim Leach is the Academy's Director of Career Services. He says the level of practical experience MMA students receive means they have no problem attracting interest from employers.
We're certainly well known by industry out in the world, and, you know, we're coming up on a career fair here. And we'll probably have in the neighborhood of 80 companies here on campus recruiting our students.
Which is not bad, he says, for a student body of less than 1,000. And before we bring you the weather, just a quick update on a story. A mistrial has been declared in the trial of a second defendant in connection with the protest against oil trains a year ago in downtown Auburn. Earlier in the day, an Androscoggin County Superior Court jury found one of the two defendants guilty of criminal trespass. That news just in. Well, it's now about 3.5 minutes before six. Time to check on the weather with Paul Cousins.
Temperatures drop steadily this evening as clouds gradually dissolve, a few lingering across the county. Valley fog by dawn, upper 30s north, upper 40s south. Tomorrow will be the most seasonable day of the week. Morning sunshine fading across the mountains in the county, mostly sunny for the remainder of the state, upper 50s north, 70s south. Showers exit northern and eastern counties early Thursday morning, with sunny slivers slated for the afternoon. Western Maine partly cloudy, breezy with more sun than clouds for southern Maine, 50 north, upper 60s south. Friday, first frost is possible for the interior and central towns, followed by abundant sun throughout the state, low 50s north, 60s south. Temperatures recover sharply over the weekend. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.
That's Maine Things Considered for this Tuesday, September 16th. We had production help from Keith Shortall, Susan Sharon, Barbara Caridi, and Mal Leary. I'm Tom Porter. Thanks for listening.